today, and it's worth saying just a few words about Sefer Vayikra in general, and this Aliyah particularly will give us an opportunity to do that as well. We mentioned in the past few weeks that the second half of Shmos and the beginning of Vayikra deal with things that are a little bit more removed from our daily experience, and therefore it's kind of a different way of learning for us, and a way that has opportunities that are not necessarily present in the areas of halacha that are more directly the maaser for our lives today. When it comes to kudshim, that takes on an additional element. We have an idea that perhaps we have a chiyuv Talmud Torah by kudshim that is above and beyond the chiyuv Talmud Torah that we have by other mitzvos, because we have a chiyuv to bring the korbanos, and we're unable to nowadays. Why exactly we're unable to is a longer discussion. It's not necessarily because of the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, a point that we can come back to a little bit later. But the practicalities are that nowadays we don't have the ability to bring the korbanos. So we are told, the Mishnah says in Menachos, and the Gemara emphasizes elsewhere, that we have a notion of neshama parim svasenu, that we can replace the actual bringing of the korbanos through the study of the korbanos, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu credits us with giving the korbanos through learning. That if we learn about the korbanos, it's ki'ilu hikriv. It's what the Mishnah says, the different drushes from elsewhere in order to make this point. But ha'osek b'toras ola ki'ilu hikriv ola, ha'osek b'toras shlamim ki'ilu hikriv shlamim. So we have the opportunity to make up for our inability to bring korbanos through learning about them. So that seems to create a greater chiyuv of Talmud Torah in this area than perhaps in other areas. And Rav Shechter points out often that we nowadays don't always pay so much attention before Shacharis to the korbanos, and he thinks that's a big mistake, that we assume that if we have limited time, somehow showed up late for Shachar somehow, so we have to choose. So we feel like Psukei DeZimra is a higher priority than reciting the Korbanos. By Isaac Bernstein, Zechon Levracha, used to express it as when you're late for davening, Korbanos are the first to be sacrificed. That's why they call that. But in practice, it's not necessarily a logical approach, because Psukei DeZimra is not an actual chiyuv. Not that we should take it lightly, but it's not an actual obligation. While reciting the korbanos very possibly is maybe even a Torah obligation or a way of fulfilling a Torah obligation. There's a comment of Rabbeinu Yonah along these lines that the Gemara says that Avraham Avinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how will I know that my descendants are going to be guaranteed the land of Israel? Maybe they'll do something wrong, maybe they'll sin, and maybe they will lose their right to the land of Israel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, no problem, they'll bring a korban, that'll take care of it, they will atone. So Avram says, well, not so fast. I have a feeling that they may not always be able to bring a korban. What if there is no Beis HaMikdash at the time? So then, how are they going to be able to atone? And so he's told that they will involve themselves in the study of the korbanos, and that will be effective. So there is a tremendous focus on the potential of learning kudshim, perhaps even in a way that doesn't apply to other mitzvahs. One could also say, and this is why the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Kook and others, who are both Kohanim, not an irrelevant point, devoted time in their lives to studying kudshim as a preparation. It's itself an expression of Tzpiyah LeYeshua, that you believe the Beis HaMikdash is going to be restored at any moment. You believe the Mashiach is going to come at any moment, so you're all the more so driven to study Kudshim and focusing on that with a practical eye, as the Chafetz Chaim did. You may not be familiar with the Sefer, the Chafetz Chaim. God willing, you should learn Kudshim seriously, and you should be aware of the Sefer. The Chafetz Chaim wrote a Sefer on Kudshim, which is essentially like a Mishnah Berurah. We wrote it in the style of Mishnah Berurah, the same kind of three-section style that he has for the Mishnah Berurah, he has for the Sefer also. It's called Likutei Halachos. He basically riffizes the Gemara, that we don't have a riff on Kudshim, so he made a riff. He takes that Psak Halacha from the back and forth in the Gemara, and then he has commentaries on the bottom. So he essentially created a practical guide to Kodshim, and this was a part of his bitachon that the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt at any moment, and that there would be a need to know how to paskin on these issues. But as he explains in the Hakdamah, it's also a reflection of his feeling that this idea that learning is equal to doing is a notion that is unique to Kachin. It's a topic which was a debate in general, that there were those who thought that this is true by everything. So let's say, for example, if it's a Sukkis and you're trapped on a desert island and you don't have a lulav, but you do have a Shulchan Aruch. It's an unusual kind of desert island. It doesn't have vegetation, but it has svarim. Or you have your smartphone, it has a, well, it's not going to work in yet. Whatever it is, you have a Shulchan Aruch. Right, so somehow it works out that you have the ability to learn Hilchos Lulav, but you don't have a Lulav. So they discuss, is it possible to fulfill all the mitzvahs this way? That should we say that learning about the mitzvah is equal to every mitzvah? Ephraim Greenblatt has a tshuva about this in one of the volumes of the Tshuvas Rivas Ephraim. Conveniently works out that there's a siman tayag in that volume, that he asks, if we have a notion of tayag mitzvos, so how are any of us able to fulfill tayag mitzvos? No one individual at any point in history, and certainly not today, is subject to all 613 mitzvos. So how is it possible for anyone to fulfill all tayag mitzvos? So he assumes you can fulfill them through studying them. That's the idea, that learning the mitzvos is like doing the mitzvah. But not everyone agrees, so there are those who assume, like the Chafetz Chaim discusses in his introduction, that this is a concept that's specifically about Kodshim, that Kodshim has this idea that if you learn Kodshim, then you are able to fulfill the mitzvah. We wrote about this, if you want to take a look, the first volume of the Kol Elyon, the Wexner Kol Elyon, the first volume of the Kol Tzvi was devoted to Kodshim, so in the Hakdamah, if you want to take a look, we talked about this machlokes, about whether this is a notion that is unique to Kodshim. It also seems to reflect itself in the Talmud Bavli, that if you look at the Talmud Bavli, so we know that there are more Masechtas and Mishnayos than there are Gemara. Not every Mishnah has Gemara on it. And it seems to correlate to that which was more Lemaisa in Bavel. So in Bavel, they did not have reason to study Zroim so much, so we don't have a Bavli on Zroim. While in Eretz Yisrael, they had to study Zroim. It was practical, so we have Yushalmi and Zroim, that the presence of the Gemara tends to reflect whether it was more practically involved or not. So we don't have a Bavli on Zroim, and we don't have a Bavli on Taras. But we do have a Bavli on Kodshim. Whether or not we have a Yushalmi on Kodshim is a different question. You may be familiar with the whole story about the fake Yushalmi and Kodshim, the forgery of Yushalmi and Kodshim. It's a whole different story. But we certainly have a Bavli on Kodshim. So why do we have a Bavli on Kodshim if we don't have a Bavli on Taras or Zroim? So it could be that this was a reflection of the fact that the Amoraim and Bavel also understood this way, that they focused most of their attention on the Masechtas that were practical, but Kodshim was in a different category, that studying Kodshim, even when it was not practiced, and where it was not practiced in Bavel, had a special quality to it, which differentiates itself from the other Masechtas. So to start the beginning of Vayikra, we have these concepts. It's a tremendous opportunity to be able to realize a different aspect of Talmud Torah. And this Aliyah specifically, we could use this as an opportunity for a few minutes to acquaint ourselves a little bit more with the concepts of Kodshim that we may not necessarily see otherwise. So just to take that opportunity, on the very first Pasuk in Revi of Vayikra, so the Pasuk says, "Mzevach Shlamim Korbano." And somebody is bringing a zavach, which is a shlamim, and then the pasuk goes on to detail aspects of that. So the Gemara in Mesach Hazvachim, Adaf Dalet Amud Aleph, focusing on that pasuk, zavach korbano, says that this teaches us that the zavach that's brought for a shlamim has to be l'shem shlamim, that you have to have it with a proper intent, has to be dedicated for the purposes of shlamim. So the topic of machsheves hakodshim, the intent that has to be present when the korbanos are brought, is a major topic in Maseches Zvachim and in Maseches Menachos. God willing, you'll learn Zvachim and Menachos. You'll learn that Menachos, essentially for the first part of it or so, is kind of a review of concepts in Zvachim. Zavach Ramincha are parallel ideas. They're both offerings. A zevach is an animal offering, and a mincha is a flower offering. But they share many halachas and many differences, so it's an interesting experience to learn zvachim and then learn menachas. But in the beginning of both, so you have the idea of the korban has to be brought lishma. And nonetheless, the Mishnah has a fascinating din that kol hazvachim shenizbechu shelo lishman ksherin, that a zevach that's brought that's not lishma is kosher, but lo alu lebailu l'shem chova. Fascinating idea. It's kosher, but it's not kosher. It's a valid to be brought in the mizbeach, but it doesn't accomplish what it's supposed to accomplish on behalf of the Bailim, and the Mishnah says, with the exception of Pesach and Chatas, which are completely possible. Shelo Lishma. So this idea that there is a concept of Lishma, so the Gemara later on in Maseches Vachim and Daf Mem Vav tells us that there are six thoughts to have. There are six aspects of Machsheves HaKadshim, that a Zevach should be brought L'shem Zevach, L'shem Zoveach, L'shem Hashem, L'shem Ishim, L'shem Reach, L'shem Nichoach. But it sounds like from Tosfos that a lot of those are nice ideas, but the crucial Machsheva that you have to have is two Machsheves that really are integral, that a change, a shinui, in this machshav is going to be an issue. It's the machshavas kodesh, that the korban itself has to have the right name. And so shinui kodesh is a problem, changing to the wrong korban, and shinui bailim, changing it to the wrong bringer, so to speak. That's only those two, sounds like from Tosfos in the beginning is Vachim, that a shinui in that area is going to disqualify the korban. But the Rambam sounds like differently. It sounds like from the Rambam that any one of these six machshavas is crucial. But Tosfos' opinion that it's specifically about those two is interesting. And Rav Nachum Zemba, I think we mentioned him not so long ago, Rav Nachum Zemba, a great Gaon who was lost in the Warsaw Ghetto with so many of his svarim. So in the Sefer Zera Avram, there's two volumes called Zera Avram. Zera Avram refers to Rabbi Avram Lofteber, who was the son-in-law of the Or Sameach. Or Sameach, Nebuchadnezzar, I don't think he had any descendants. He had one daughter who died young, but she had lived long enough to be married to Avram Lofteber. They never had any children. And Avram Lofteber had letters back and forth from Menachem Zemba. So that volume is called Zera Avram. And there's another volume also called Zera Avram, just of Avram Lofteber's Chidushim. So in the Zera Avram, Rabbi Nachum Zemba explains that the idea of Shinoi Kodesh and Shinoi Bailim, the reason that those are so crucial is because those are definitional machshavas. That actually designates what the korban is. So without those machshavas, you're missing something crucial. You're missing a whole component of what the korban is. So the Shita Mekubet says in the beginning of Zvachim raises a question which is probably answered by this, because normally we have a principle that when it comes to kadshim, so we say it has to be shina olav hakasav la'akev, that if the pasuk mentions something once, so then it's not necessarily ma'akev in kadshim, that the korban, whatever is being discussed, could be valid without that. It has to be mentioned twice in order for it to be la'akev. So here you don't see that rule applying. Here it says that we need to have the machshava, otherwise it's not going to be ol l'bayil l'shem chova. And we don't have a second pasuk telling us this din. So Shita Mekubetzes raises that question. And the answer could be that here you don't need a drasha to tell you that it's ma'akev, because if that's what defines the korban, so you understand. If it's missing that, that's pretty fundamental. Parenthetically, this idea of shinul v'kasav la'akev is presumably applicable only in kadshim. The Chazon Ish disagreed. The Chazon Ish thought this was a halacha in Kol HaTorah Kula. But most assume, the vast majority assume, that this is a distinct kodshim halacha. Yosef Engel has an essay about this in Aspen Deraisa, where he points out it's really only about the avodas hakodshim, very specific kodshim halacha. There's a discussion, for example, does it apply to Nyanei Beis HaMikdash in general, or just the korbanos? But it seems to be associated with kodshim as a reflection of the fact that different areas of halacha have their own unique rules. The point that Rosh Hashanah often emphasizes, that the Vilna Gaon has a commentary in the Pasuk in Parsha Shoftim, that when you go to ask a shaila of the halachic authority, bein din ledin, bein dam ledam, bein nega lenega, so that differentiation, the Vilna Gaon comments, each one reflects a different area of halacha. and that each area of halacha has its own rules, has its own setup. So too, Kadshim has its own distinct rules. If you learn there's a Gemara in the beginning, in the middle of Maseches Vachim, around Daf Samach, where the Gemara talks about other concepts of drashos and limudim that seem to be unique to Kadshim. So this is apparently one of them, that it has to be repeated in order for it to be ma'akev. So the Shita Mekubetzes asks, how come we don't have that rule here by Machshava? So apparently one could say, like from Nachum Zemba, that it's definitional and therefore it's self-evident that if you're missing this, you're missing it completely. This is also perhaps reflected, as some of the Acharonim discussed, so that first Mishnah in Zvachim that says that you essentially have to have the right Machshava. So then in the end of the Mishnah, there's a view of Rabbi Shimon Achiazariah, who says that if you have the wrong kavana for the wrong korban, but it's a korban that's more kodesh than the one that you're bringing, so then that's fine, as long as it includes the kedusha of the korban that you're bringing. So it sounds like the Tanakhama disagrees with that, that it's not only that you have to have enough kedusha in mind, but you have to have the exact right kavana in mind. So why should that be? So the Shagas Aryeh asked this question, because the Shagas Aryeh says that when it comes to Lishma by a Sefer Torah and Mezuzah, so there you have to have Kavana Lishma, but if you have Kavana for too much Kedusha, so then that's also going to be affected. So why is that not the case here? So he suggests that it's just a technical problem, that you're going to then have the wrong korban and you're not going to be able to have a proper hektish, so you're not going to be able to bring it. But latest farim suggests that, no, there's a difference between lishma by a sefer Torah and lishma by a korban, that by a sefer Torah, so it's about designating it as holy. So, okay, if it's very holy, that's also good. But when it comes to a korban, it's specifically about defining the korban. And if you have the wrong kavana, the wrong lishma, there's something fundamentally missing in the korban. But despite all that, so we have, there's a lot of back and forth. If you learn the sugyas of Machshavas Sakachim, so we'll discuss more about this in a second. You think one thing, and then the next daf tells you everything is completely opposite of what you thought, that it goes, there's a major modifier that redefines everything. So after we're told that you have to have the right kavana, and if you don't have the right kavana, you're going to be in trouble, or you're at least not going to count for you. So the Gemara then tells us that there's a principle of stama lishma, that if you don't say anything one way or another, so then the assumption is that it is lishma. So not lishma is an active not lishma, but nothing that's considered to be lishma. So that's a whole question the Acharonim talk about. There's a big brisker rav about this, that are we saying essentially that karbanos need kavana, or need lishma, or that bad lishma messes them up? Which one is it? Is it a positive element? Is it a negative element? When you say stama lishma, does that mean that the carbon essentially contains the elements for its own lishma, so you don't really have to do anything? It's just that if you have wrong kavanas, you can mess it up. Or does it mean that it's really required that you have the right intent, but that when all the details are there, then it's assumed that the individual does have the right intent? So is it about how you're doing it? Is it about the item? There's a lot of discussion about this. And there's also a question how much this transfers over to mitzvos. Is this the rule by mitzvos in general, or just by korbanos? That's also important to emphasize, that sometimes the terms kavana and the shema get intertwined, maybe inappropriately. Some of the Acharonim point out that when it comes to mitzvos, we're talking about kavana usually, about the intent that you have of a mitzvah. We talked about that a little bit yesterday in the context of being forced. It's actually not irrelevant. It's an important topic also, because if you say kavana is about you, then the question we discussed yesterday, if you're being forced to do a mitzvah, to what extent is that your kavana too, is also an important question. But whether or not lishma and kavana should be more formally distinguished from each other is one question. But also related to that is whether this is a concept that exists by mitzvos. So, for example, the Noda Bihuda has a often quoted tshuva in Chelek Aleph and Yeridei in Siman Tzadi Gimel, where he argued on chasidus in general. The Noda Bihuda was the big misnaget. Discuss this at the Orthodox Forum. So the Neo Hisnagdus. So the Noda Bihuda was a big misnage, And one of the issues that he fought the Chassidim over, nowadays we don't think about this issue so much, but this was something he was very opposed to, is the whole concept of saying l'shem yichud before you do a mitzvah. That he thought that the idea that you should declare a kavana before doing a mitzvah, l'shem, he was against that. And he thought that by mitzvos also we have the idea of stamma l'shma, that in general the expectation is when you do a mitzvah it is l'shem yichud kudosh b'richu shchinte, and for you to declare it now and therefore imply that it's not inherently true, he thought that undermines stamma l'shma, and that was one of the many reasons that he was opposed to it. So he said that the pasuk, he had a kind of a strong statement there. So the pasuk that says "Zayderach Hashem Tzadikim Yelchu Bo Poshlim Yikashlubam." So he wrote in the tshuva that he had some expression about Chasidim Yikashlubam, and was part of his argument there. So the publisher was a Chasidish publisher. So he took the word out and he put back in the way the pasuk actually says "Poshlim." So the Behuda reportedly responded to that I took the poshim and made them into chassidim, he took the chassidim and made them into poshim. Anyway, so it was a whole machlokas back and forth, but it had to do with this idea of stamma l'shma, which the Gemara says in the context of kavanos, and one could argue whether or not it applies to mitzvos. The Kesef Mishnah, just a little yarn of the Yom, the Kesef Mishnah reads in the Rambam that he thinks the Rambam doesn't apply stamma l'shma to Karban Pesach. To the other kavanos, yes, but not to Korban Pesach. And some thought, Marcheshes has a truth about this, he thought that it's because a Pesach is essentially a Shlamim, so if we're just going to look at the Korban, then we're not going to have any inherent Lashma, and that maybe if the idea is that it's somehow inherent in the process, then Korban Pesach maybe doesn't have that to it. Hi?
Isn't the Rambam not referenced as Korban Pesach, just Pesach?
Okay. Could be, you see, that would therefore show that that's why it shouldn't have a din l'shma. It should have din stam l'shma, rather. Maybe. Could be. But what we also find, so this also to give us a little bit of synergy, because this actually will have implications for what we, God willing, will talk about. So keep it in mind now. So we find that a get is not stam l'shma. Right? A get has to be written l'shma. And yet, the Gemara says that there you don't have stamma. So a korban has to be lishma, and you do have stamma, and a get, you don't. So Tosfos discusses, that the Gemara explains what the difference is, that stam korban hakravo medes, that a korban by its very nature is there to be brought as a korban, so therefore it kind of inherently has its own direction to it. While stam isha lav legerishin medes, that we don't assume that a woman is necessarily by her very nature waiting to be divorced, and therefore she doesn't provide the lishma right away. So there's an important tosfos there, which keep it in mind because it'll be relevant to some of the things we're talking about. That tosfos over there in Zvachim says, well, is that true always? Is it always true that isha lav legerishin medes? Let's say, for example, let's say she has an affair. Let's say she's an Isha Sedinsa. So then there's an obligation on the husband to divorce her. So maybe we should say, at least in that case, we should say Stamma L'shma, because the husband is obligated to divorce her. So Tosfos says a Chiddush there, which is important to figure out if it's true or not, that he says that the husband is not actually obligated to divorce his wife if she has an affair. He's usher to her. They're not allowed to have relations anymore. But they're not necessarily obligated to divorce. So that's going to be an important issue that we'll have to talk about when we talk about kfiyah begitin that we started alluding to yesterday, because one of the major issues in any assessment of kfiyah begitin is going to be, is there a inherent obligation for divorce in a situation? So let's say you have a situation, let's say if the wife was adulterous, so should we say, does that change the mechanics in terms of the husband being mechuyev to divorce her? So it's going to be relevant, this question, that the fact that they're prohibited to each other, does that automatically mean there's a chiyuv to divorce? There is a different shuva about the different shuva than the Behuda, which is also well known for a whole different reasons, where he has a kavod abrios shaila, where there was a wife who was mezana, and the, without going into the details, because it's very sordid, a lot of sordid shuvas in the Noda Behuda. I remember Shefta commenting once that Prague at that time was like New York. It was just all the kind of shilas that he got was wild if you read through the cases. So this is a well-known one where there was a particularly sordid affair. And the man involved eventually did tshuva, But he wanted to know, should he have to tell the husband, because if they're prohibited to each other, so maybe the husband has to be informed. And the other side was that it was a distinguished family, and for them to get divorced, he thought maybe it would be a big covered abrios issue, so maybe that should be a reason not to tell the husband, since the husband doesn't know, it was bishogi. So in that shuvah, you know, the Behuda writes that, no, it's not necessarily a covered abrios issue, because they don't have to get divorced. They're usur to each other, but if they're willing to not looking to marry anybody else, so then they don't actually have to get divorced, and doesn't have to be public, and... Sorry?
They wouldn't be able to live yet.
So how you deal with the yichud issue is an important question, which I have to figure out also. But say it doesn't necessarily have to be an actual divorce. If they're not looking to marry anybody else, they were an older couple, then theoretically it's not mechuyev, it doesn't have actual chiyuv divorce, which is based on this Tosfos over here about stama begitten. So again, just put that in your pocket for when we get further with the gittin topics, it's going to be relevant. He's saying that iser they have to observe. He says the question was maybe I shouldn't tell the husband because maybe it's a kavod abrios to force him to get divorced. If the husband doesn't know that the wife had an affair, so the person was saying if I don't tell the husband, then we'll save him from the embarrassment of the divorce. So maybe for the kavod abrios,
so then they were out of relations.
So you see, he was saying you should tell him. And they're prohibited to each other, but it doesn't mean they have to get divorced. And so if they're not looking to marry anybody else, then it wouldn't necessarily have to come up. There are many other more fascinating topics in Kutch. I'll just say a few more words about this topic of Machshava. So first of all, this distinction in the Mishnah is also very unusual, that the idea that Kasher v'lo'olu l'baylin l'shem chova, the idea that Karban is good, it starts off in a positive way, right? That's also a topic... It's also parallel to Psachim, so I want to have a Yonah Dioma connection. So the Gemara in the beginning of Psachim talks about Lishon Nekiya, how we always try to be positive. So the first Mishnah in Psachim talks about nighttime, but B'dikas Chametz, but because it wants to be cheerful, so it uses the word or la arbasar to start off the Masechta. So to Zvachim, which is telling us what's no good, but it says it in a very positive way. So call Zvachim Ksheirim El Shlalu Bayim Shem Chova. It's good. It doesn't count, but it's good. So you know what does that mean to be good and not count? It's an unusual kind of formulation. So apparently the Gemara tries to explain a little bit what it means, that it doesn't obtain a full kapara for the Bailim, but it accomplishes something. And the Kajik Lover Rav, who I think we've mentioned in the past, two elements of the Kajik Lover's Tshuvas are that he's very creative and that he's always being Melamed Tzchus and Klal Yisrael, it's a wonderful thing. So in the spirit of those 2 points, so he has a Tshuva where the question, which is also relevant to Pesach, the question of when you have an obligation of Lashma, so can a machine accomplish that? If you are making something by machine, so is that also able to fulfill the requirement of Lashma? So that's relevant to matzah, right? And that's relevant to tzitzit. It's also have to be made lishma. So he has an interesting suggestion. He says, well, maybe machine's lishma, maybe it's not, maybe it's somewhere in between, I don't know. So maybe we could say that it's kasher shalol b'ayim l'shem chover, that it's, you know, somewhere in between, that it has a status that it's valid, that tzitzits are good. It's not so, he says, so for example, somebody were to wear tzitzits like this, so he's wearing a four-cornered garment and he's got tzitzits, so what if the tzitzits are no good? So then it's like you have a four-cornered garment without tzitzits? No, so it does have tzitzits. It's shalol b'ayim l'shem chover. It's not the full fulfillment of tzitzits, but the garment still good. It's a very creative formulation based on this idea. And again, the question could be asked, to what extent does this carry over to mitzvahs in general, and to what extent should we conflate lishma and kavana? But there is a position like this also in terms of mitzvahs, shrichas, kavana. I think we mentioned it yesterday, somebody asked about this, that there is a view, it's kind of a more negative view, that mitzvahs ain't shrichas kavana, means that the mitzvah is done, but you don't get credit for it. So it's really not so great. That it means that you might think mitzvah ain't shrichas kavana means that you can fulfill a mitzvah even without having intent. And this view is saying, no, it's more like kasher v'lo'olu l'bayim l'shem chova, that the mitzvah is good. You don't have to do the mitzvah again, because the mitzvah, as far as the mitzvah is concerned, is fulfilled. But you're not getting any schar mitzvah for it, which is a pretty pessimistic view of what that position would mean. Nachum?
Is that like... it's not a bit to say, but it's not really an
assay. Right, something like that. It would seem to be somewhere in the middle like that you're not doing anything wrong, but you're not getting any credit for it. which is a longer discussion, but maybe that's such a thing also. So just really to say one more word about this idea of Lishma and about saying words about it. So one of the interesting things about learning Kadshim is that you could learn all of Maseches Vachim from beginning to end and the beginning of Maseches Menachos. And you might think that when it comes to these Karbanos, that if you would think the wrong thing by accident, you're going to mess up the Karban. And it turns out that both of those parts are probably not true or at least debatable. Now, first of all, if it's by accident, so then apparently that's also not a poso, but it has to be intentional. That the Gemara has a machlokas about this, but I think we paskin that Akira betos lav shmei Akira, that the wrong machshava has to be the intentional wrong machshava and not a mistaken wrong machshava. So if you learn Zvachim, the Chafetz Chaim, if you learn with the Lakute Halacha, so in the first mission in Zvachim, the Chafetz Chaim will tell you this din, that Akira betos lav shmei Akira. But if you're not with the language of the Kutei Halachas, you're just reading the Gemara, so the Gemara doesn't tell you this until the middle of Menachos, there's a machlokas about this. But this is going to characterize everything in Zvachim, that this whole issue of Machshava is only if it's intentional. Then the question could be asked equally importantly. So I said, if you think the wrong thing by accident, so apparently by accident is not the issue, but also is thinking the issue. So we call it Machshava. So do we mean literally Machshava? Or is this really another way to say speech? The speech has to actually be there in order to reflect the machshava, and that machshava by itself is not really an issue. So that was a major machlokus harishonim. That's an issue which also carries over to the Shema of a Sefer Torah today. It's machlokus harishonim as well, that when the sofer writes a Sefer Torah, it has to be a Lishma. So does he have to say it out loud, or is it enough to think it? So we're talking about machshav in the literal sense, or does it have to be spoken? So these are major issues that affect the whole question of Machshava by Kadshim, and that's derived from this pasuk. It's an appropriate introduction to Vayikra as a whole, but it happens to be in our Aliyah, so it's the first pasuk of our Aliyah, so it's a good time to put it in. But these are all important themes. If you want to have a more riddle game type introduction to some of these themes, so you can read the Sefer Gevurah Shmonim. Rav Yosef Engel has a Sefer. He has two beautiful svarim like this. I have many beautiful svarim, but two svarim of this type. He has a sefer called Shivan Panim LaTorah and Gvura Shmonim. So what do those two titles have in common? They both have numbers in them. That the Shivan Panim LaTorah, he has one kasha and he gives 70 different terutzim to the question. And Gvura Shmonim, he has one kasha and 80 different answers. When I was in Karen Biavna, I wanted to write a book like that for Purim. That I think I mentioned this, that there was a stira that I thought was a very important stira to be determined, that to deal with, write a sefer like this for Purim, that on sometimes if somebody insults you, so you say, I'm not going to take this sitting down. So it's mashmi, you should stand up if they insult you. But other times when they insult you, you say, I'm not going to stand for this. So it's mashmi, you should sit down. So I went around collecting answers from people. I got all kinds of answers. Some thought it was a chiluk between Ashkenazim and Svardim, like tefillin. Some thought that it was relevant to the sman, Hilchos Eidos. It all depends what the other guy is doing, sitting or standing. So it happens to be it's actually a Tosfos. And Baruch, the Tosfos says that when the Gemara says that you have to do part of Kriyat Shema Ba'amida, so Tosfos says, what do you mean, Amida? You don't have to stand up for Kriyat Shema. So, no, it means that you should stand still. So that's what we've shot. I'm not going to stand still. It means I'm not going to... Anyway, but so I never got around to writing that sefer. But if you want a sefer like that, so Rav Yosef Engel has two svarim like that, 70 and 80 terutzim. So one of the svarim, I think the Gevurah Shmonim, is 80 terutzim. So he talks about that, he says, puts together two opinions, that there's an opinion that not just the Kohanim can mess up the Korban with the wrong Machshava, but also a Balim of Faglim, that also the Balim of the Korban could also mess up the Korban if they have the wrong Machshava. And there's also an opinion in the Minchas Sota, the Korban that's brought as part of the Sota ritual, that the woman herself is one of the Balim of the Korban. So if you put those two positions together, so every... if she's smart, every possible sota could mess up the whole process and save herself by just messing up the korban, because she'll be mafagel as a korban with the wrong machshava. So why does that not always happen? So he has 80 answers to that question. So in the course of that, he says a lot about machshava sakachin and how exactly they play out and what it needs speech, doesn't need speech. Is it how does it work? So if you want a more creative, fun way to learn a lot about machshava sakachin, then feel free to read that sefer. I'm sure it's available on yearbooks.org. It's certainly printed in the Kol Kitzvei Rav Yosef Engels. So as far as always kedai, but that's another whole other angle. So in any event, yes, Sammy.
As far as the Marshall, I think so. I'm assuming you're asking nowadays that you should just say everything out loud.
For sefer Torah,
as well. Yeah.
Right. So I'm sure there's folks talk from Ramachmer on this, but it is machlokas rishonim. Right. Comes up in a few contexts, but right, halacha ma'isa is from the Ramachmer on this. So just to say a little bit more, we spent a lot of disproportionate time on that, and we'll spend in general most of our time on these first two psukim, but there's still more just to say on these opening psukim. So first of all, the idea of shlamim, so the Torah's Kohanim says that the word shlamim comes from the word shalom, that's one opinion, because everyone is happy, everyone's b'shalom, that the Mizbeach gets to eat a little bit, and the Bailim get to eat a little bit, and the Kohanim get to eat a little bit, so everyone's b'shalom. So that's an important idea. In general, first of all, the idea of the shlamim is that it's a uniquely Jewish karban. The Rashiv of Karbi Avner of Goldwicht, and many others emphasize this idea. This is one of the Rashiv's constant refrains, that Judaism is about, the Torah in general, is about being Mekadesh the Chomer, is about lifting up the profane and taking the material world and making it Kodesh. So we're davke into shlamim. Shlamim is specifically a Jewish karban. A non-Jew can bring a karban in the Beis HaMikdash also, but their karbanos are olas, meaning that the mentality is that it's kulo kolil, and ola is completely burnt, that's the religious expression. You take something and you devote it completely to God. While the Jews are able to relate to the idea of a shlamim is that you take the physical world and you make it kodesh, so you're also able to eat from it. So the idea of the shlamim is a specifically, uniquely Jewish idea, and again, this was one of the major themes that Rashid would emphasize constantly. And we also find it associated with the word shalem. So the Gemara says in Zvachim Adaf Tzaritas, that an avel is not mishaleach kabra an onen, rather an onen, which is a din daraisa. That we normally assume nowadays that avelus is for the most part a din drabanan, and that aninus, what we call aninus, is also probably drabanan, the idea of the tour from mitzvos before the burial. But there is a concept of aninus min haTorah, particularly in the context of kachim, that an onen is based on a pasuk by Aaron HaKohen. An onen biyom misul kvura has a exclusion from kachim. So the Gemara says, based on this pasuk, that an onen is not mishaleach karbonosav. He doesn't send his karbon because he's not bishalom. The pasuk is shalom is based on the idea of shalom. So we find, for example, the iser sheila shalom with an avel that well, it could be both really, but here it sounds like it's not bishalom. Yeah, but there's room to call it a little bit of both. The words are themselves related. But that it could be, if you look at the Torah Tamim's comments over here, it sounds like he's saying there's basically a machlokas between the two statements, which are in different places in Chazal. But, you know, is the word shlomim based on shalem or based on shalom? So should it be shlomim or should it be shlemim? You know, what's the idea? But they seem to
be full.
Right, full or complete or at peace. And as we'll mention in a second, that we may as well mention now. So Rav Hirsch writes that the idea, writes over here, that the idea of being b'shalom means that you feel like nothing is missing, like shlemus is shalom, which probably is a critique of the idea. People say, okay, to make peace between two people, to make what they call a pshara, means that each side should walk away feeling like they're losing out, which is a kind of a cynical view. And maybe it's quite the opposite, that the real making shalom is that if you can make each side feel like they got everything they need, and which is often quite the challenge, because there's a mentality of scarcity and that zero sum, whatever I get, you don't get. But the real shalom is based on the premise that that's not what's happening, and that we both can somehow get what we want and not feel like we're missing anything. So that's the theme of shalom in general, and this carbon seems to require that as well. And the karbanos in general then have this din that if there is a overt sense of lack of shlemus, so somebody is in avelus, so somebody really is feeling a sense of loss, so then that's inconsistent with the idea of the karban. The Torah Tamima has a halachic diuk from this Gemara, that the fact that the Gemara says, Einu mishaleach karbanosa, he doesn't send his karban, well, it could say he doesn't bring his karban. So there's a discussion in the Shulchan Aruch, in Yoredeya, in Shin Sadi Gimel, that the Rama writes that an Avel should not leave his house. And even for a Dvar Mitzvah, he should only, as an Avel and Shuvah, should only leave his house for a Dvar Mitzvah if it's a Mitzvah that only he can do. The Mitzvah won't get done without him. So you could see that perhaps in these Gemaras, when the Gemara says the Avel should not send his Karban, that the Havmina was that if he was obligated in the Karban, he wouldn't bring it himself, he would send it. So that's to show you that if it's at all possible for it to get done without him, he wouldn't leave his house. And here it goes even further and says that he doesn't even send it. He doesn't even do it at all. And the Pasuk here also contains the phrase, Ahu Makriv. And so that idea, Hu Makriv, so it's singular, the Taurus Konim also says that shows that in the Dava is brought by an individual, it's not brought by a Sibur. So that's just relevant, just parenthetically. That the idea of a tefillas nadava, that the Gemara says that theoretically an individual could bring a tefillah, just like a nadava, just like in the Beis HaMikdash, you can bring a karban voluntarily outside the normal cycle. So too, there could be a tefillah that could be outside the normal cycle, not just the three tefillahs a day, but you could add a tefillah called a nadava. So there's a whole discussion, is that based on the fact that tefillah is rachmanis and you could always ask for rachmanis? Or is that based literally on the carbon, that we parallel the carbon nadava? So that has all kinds of implications. One of them is that we say a tzibur cannot do a tfilas nadava. You can't decide that 10 men will get together and voluntarily have a tfilas tzibur together. What also is relevant and has all kinds of interesting halachic implications, but I think time would allow us to discuss it, but the question of whether you could have a tfilas nadava on Shabbos. That some posts can maintain that you can't have a tefillas nadava on Shabbos because you can't bring a carbon nadava on Shabbos, and therefore tefillas nadava also doesn't get off the ground. While others say, no, it's a practical issue, that you can't bring a carbon nadava on Shabbos because it's got malachas involved, and you don't have a heter to do the malachas if it's not a carbon sibur. That's mano kavua that you're chayef for on that day. But the tefillah doesn't involve any malachas, so there shouldn't be any reason why you can't have a korban, a tefillah nadava on Shabbos. That has major implications, just to say quickly, because normally nowadays we don't do a tefillah nadava too easily, because the Shulchan Aruch says you have to have tremendous kavana in order to do it. But the exception is, the poskim write, that the Rishonim already write, that if you have a suffix, whether you're chayiv in a tefillah or not. So then, if you have a suffix, if you're chayiv in a tefillah, so then you could say that you would have normally thought, well, tefillah is drabbanan, so suffix drabbanan lahakel, so leave out. But because nadava is possible, so that's what the Rishonim recommend, that you offer a tefillah nadava and use that instead to make up a tefillah that you're not sure about. So it's a shaila whether you could do that on Shabbos. So just to give you a quick example of how that could come up, let's say tomorrow night, and all these past Friday nights, that let's say you're running into shul late Friday afternoon, and you realize that you forgot to say Tein Talamot Levracha in Mincha on Friday afternoon, and now it's Friday night. So it's a machlokes whether or not it makes sense to say two Shmon Esreis, because normally if you forget to say Tein Talamot Levracha, you'd have to repeat the Shmon Esrei. But here, if you're going to repeat two Myrvs Friday night, what is that going to do? You're not going to say Tein Talamot Levracha in those tefillahs anyway, because you don't say it on Shabbos. So it's a machlokas whether or not there's any point in repeating that tefillah. So what are you going to do? So you could say Safik Lahakel, and then you might say, all right, but then in those situations we say, do a tefillahs Nadava. But it's a machlokas whether you do a Nadava on Shabbos because of this whole issue. So try not to forget. You shouldn't have this issue. Okay, that's great advice. So just to say a little bit more, that next pasuk, just to quickly mention some words on the next pasuk. Next pasuk says, "V'samach yado al rosh karbano, v'shachto pesach ohal moed." So you do smicha on the karban, as you push your hands down, and you shecht it by the door of the ohal moed. So first of all, the idea of smicha, just to mention that. Those of you who are in smicha should be more interested in this, just because you're learning even more. But it doesn't have to do with smicha of Rabbanus, but just to play on the words. But the smicha here is about pushing down. What's going on there? Pushing down on the korban. So you have to, when you bring a korban, you have to push both hands down on it. But the Targum Yonasan, it's actually on the earlier reference, in the beginning of the parasha, where it says also v'samach yado. that the Targum Yonasan says, the right hand you push down with all force. So the later Sfarim say, what do you mean the right hand? But the Gemara is explicit that you're supposed to do it with both hands. So there is a shtickel about this in the Mishkan B'Tzalel of B'Tzalel Rudinsky, where he suggests that the idea is, he quotes first Rav Sternbach as making this point, that there's two different dinners. So the actual smicha you do with both hands. But the halacha, that it's got to be b'kol kocho, so that you do with your right hand, which is, for most people, the stronger hand. So the idea of b'kol kocho, he then goes on to discuss what the intent here is, and it's relevant to what we spoke about a little bit last week, that we have a notion we talked about last week that HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us to try to do what we can't do. We do our part and he does the rest. So you find that in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, that we're told that you had to light the fire in the Mizbeach, even though the fire would really come down in the Shemayim. So what's the point then of us lighting? So apparently we wanted to cover up the nace a little bit. The fire comes down as a nace, but we cover that up by doing our part. So it's funny because normally we want to advertise Nisan, right? That's the whole idea, Pishlami Nisa, we've spoken about, that we put such emphasis on. So he has a drasha there, Vitzal Rudinsky, to note that it's possible for these two points to take away from each other. That one might think that if we emphasize the Nes, so that means that we should de-emphasize our own effort, that we shouldn't feel like we have to do too much. But it's very much not the case, that we want to show that we are very involved, and we're involved as much as we can, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills in the rest. But we shouldn't take the nace as a reason to not go all out. In Adarabba, we have to go all out. So that's the idea, smicha b'kol kocho, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the carbon, but we put all our energy into it. We lean on it completely. So he says that's also the idea of Pirsuma Nisa. Adarabba, that is this point. And that's what we were discussing, a little for a little synergy both directions. So we have Pesach in a few weeks. And 2 weeks ago we were talking about, last week we were talking about spending all your money on mitzvos that you don't have to do, but for Pirsuma Nisa you do have to, and we mentioned various explanations why. So he says that's the whole point. The whole point of Pirsuma Nisa is to show that we're going to go as far as we can, push ourselves to the absolute limit, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the rest. So that's got to be the message. These two points should not take away from each other, and that's also what Smicha represents. It then has a drasha also about the next part of the pasuk, says Shchato Pesach Oho Moed, that there is a halacha, the Gemara says in Zvachim, based on this pasuk, that the shchita has to take place when the doors of the Oho Moed are open, and if not, then the carbon is no good. And it's Machlokas Rashi and Tosus. Rashi says that this is a din specifically by Shlomim over here. Tosus says it's true by all the Karbanos, the door has to be open. So Tzal Rudinsky has a drush about this also. Why is it that the doors have to be open? Especially in light of the fact we alluded to before that there is an opinion in the Gemara that Makriv and Afal Pi Shein Bayis, that you could have Karbanos even without a Beis HaMikdash. So then you have no doors at all. So how could it be so crucial that you have to have the doors open if you could also have Karbanos without doors? So you could say, all right, if you have the Beis HaMikdash, you have the Mishkan, the doors have to be open, but without that, they don't have to exist. It's a little bit dochuk, it seems. Yeah, so that's a more complicated concept than we can explain in a minute, but it's probably not going to necessarily address this. But what he suggests is that part of the whole theme of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash is that the Kedusha is going to spread outward, and that should always be our mentality, being involved in the Karbanos, that this is a message for the whole rest of the world. And therefore, he says, for example, the light, the windows of the Mishkan were the opposite of what you'd normally find that in most houses. So maybe if you're going to have it uneven, you'll have a small opening outside and a bigger opening inside so that the light will spread out into the house. And in the Beis HaMikdash, it was the other way around. The windows were smaller on the inside, bigger on the outside, in the Mishkan, rather. So why is that? So that is because the whole message is that the light is coming from inside, outside. Otherwise, because you don't really need the light anyway from the outside. The whole point is to show that it's about the Kedusha going outside, and that's the mentality we should have, and that's why we want the doors to be open. There's a lot more to say about all these themes, but not so much more time. I also want to just say a few words about HaChodesh, because this is the last of the Dalet Parshios, just to speak about that for a brief period of time, which based on what we're about to say might be especially appropriate. Parshas HaChodesh is the last of the four parshias. We had the opportunity, it's also Revi of Parshas Bo, so we had the opportunity earlier this year to talk about the actual psukim in HaChodesh, so you're encouraged to go back and go to the tape for that if you want to get more details about HaChodesh. HaChodesh is very appropriate because the din of Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, so really all of Hilchos Pesach is in HaChodesh. All of the details of Matzah and Chametz and Korban Pesach is all included in that short section from Perek Yud Beis of Parshas Bo. And it's together with last week's Parah and this week's HaChodesh. So even though the four Parshias usually are spread out over more than 4 weeks, but Parah and Chodesh are always back to back. They are the same theme. They're all about the themes of Tumah and Taira and preparing for Pesach, and therefore they always come one after each other. And the theme of HaChodesh is particularly important. The whole idea, which again we did speak about more length in Bo, so it should take a look, but just to discuss it in this context. So the idea of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, the idea that the time is now being given to us to be able to use productively, and the whole difference between an Eved and a free person is the Eved has no control over his time, and we Davka do, and therefore we can use it productively. So that's the crucial idea. And there, just to mention a thought from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, which I heard from his grandson, Meir Soloveitchik, I think it's also written, but he had an idea that the Dalet Parshios are all reflective of the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, where it says, Al Yisalel Chacham B'Chachmaso, Ve'al Yisalel Asher B'Ashro, Ve'al Yisalel Givur B'Gvuraso, Ki Bezos Yisalel HaMisalel, Haskel V'Yadawosi, right, that Yirmiyahu says that the wise man should not take pride in his wisdom, and the rich man in his riches, and the strong man in his strength, but rather in knowing God. So he suggested, Al Pi Derech HaDrosh, that that's the theme of all the Dalet Parshios, that we're told that we shouldn't take pride either in our wisdom or our wealth or our power. So that is in Parshas Parah, which is a chok, which tells us that our wisdom is limited, that we can't think we understand everything. And Shkalim tells us that our money is not exclusively ours, and we have to, or ours at all, and we have to use it for high purposes, and we shouldn't take pride in our wealth. And Gvuraso, that we need God's help to fight a malik, that Parshas Chiras Malik represents the idea that we shouldn't have confidence in an unbounded sense in our strength either. Rather, what are we trying to do? We're trying to know God, and that is what HaChodesh is about. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, telling us the first mitzvah, that's the beginning of Haskel V'Yadoosi, that's the idea that HaChodesh comes and represents. So Parah is Chachmaso, the idea that you shouldn't take too much pride in your wisdom, because you see, we don't understand the Chukim. So this idea, he also commented, and appropriately we'll end on this, but the idea is also that therefore once we realize our time, so we said we only have a very brief period of time to talk about this, we want to take advantage of it, so that's the whole point. The whole point is that we should realize how valuable our time is and how much we're able to appreciate it. And he noted that our mentality towards time, so you could also see in how we pick our words. So we have, sometimes you have Birkas HaChodesh together with Parshas HaChodesh. We did Birkas HaChodesh last week. We have Rosh Chodesh this week. But we count the Molad in terms of Chalakim. We have this very strange unit of time, which is a very short period of time. It's about 10/3 of a second, 3 1/3 seconds. While in English, so we don't usually count time like that, we more commonly talk about minutes. So this is a drasha, how far you want to take it, but his point was that you see the language that a minute is much longer than a chelek, it's about 18 times as long as a chelek, but still the language we use, minute, means it's a very small period of time, it doesn't really count for anything, not much we can do with it. While a chelek, that's the opposite, a chelek means it's a part of something, even though it's such a tiny unit of time, it's still a part of something, it's still something you can do something with, and that's what we're trying to illustrate by stuffing this in before the clock. But the point is that the whole message is that we can take even the smallest units of time and use them productively, now that we are indeed the masters of our fate, so to speak, the masters of our time, that we are free people rather than avadim. So an important machshava for Parshas HaChodesh, and God willing, we'll talk about some Pesach and Yanim on Sunday, and then we will continue from there. Wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. Should be only good things, and we will daven mincha.